from KQED.
Welcome back to Form. I'm Dave Iverson. On December 3rd, 2001, the first news accounts read like this. A man claiming to be an American was captured among more than 80 Taliban fighters after their prison rebellion was crushed at an Afghan fort. A Pentagon spokesman says U.S. military forces in Afghanistan have in their control a man who calls himself a U.S. citizen. That man, of course, was 20-year-old John Walker Lind, soon to be known as the American Taliban. He was eventually charged with 10 criminal counts, including conspiring to kill Americans and participating in terrorism. But in the end, the most serious charges were dropped in return for a guilty plea on one count of providing services to a terrorist organization. On October 2, 2002, John Walker Lind was sentenced to 20 years in prison. He's now served nearly half of that time, and last weekend, his father, Frank Lind, wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times making the case for his son to be set free. "If Bin Laden is dead," Frank Lind wrote, "why can't John come home?" Is it time for John Walker Lind to come home to the Bay Area? That's the question we're going to explore now with his father, Frank Lind, who joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Dave. Can I add one quick correction, a really important correction to what you just said? John was not convicted of any terrorism count. He was convicted of providing his services to the Taliban government of Afghanistan, which is not a terrorist organization. It was not at the time. So it's really an important distinction. Thank you.
Sure. But what I believe what I said was that he was sentenced to 20 years on account of providing services. That's correct. Is that right?
Services, correct, right. The Taliban, but not to any terrorist organization.
But the reason why that was a crime at that time was that the Taliban had been defined as a terrorist organization by both the Clinton and the Bush administrations.
No, sir, that's not true. The Taliban government of Afghanistan was never characterized as a terrorist organization. This is a really important distinction.
Okay.
They were not welcomed by the American government, but they were never classified as a terrorist organization. There were economic sanctions imposed on the Taliban government by President Clinton. John's conviction, his only conviction, is of providing services in violation of the economic sanctions against the Taliban government. There's no terrorism charge here.
Okay. If I'm incorrect about that, I take your correction. In the reading that I had done, I had come to a different understanding of that, but I take your point. Let's go back, though, to that time, if we might, because part of what I'm interested in walking through with you this morning is your understanding of what was going on at that time with your son. When you first heard those news reports that I read from on December the 3rd, 2001, what was your understanding of what John was doing at that time? What was that like, hearing that news?
Well, Dave, actually, it was on Saturday night, the 1st of December, that John's mom got a hold of me and said, "Come over right away. There's news about John." At that point, it was only on a website, the MSNBC website, a report about a young American. It didn't identify him by his name, but it said he had been found in Afghanistan in the wreckage of that fortress. And we recognized John from the photograph. It said he had been born in Washington, D.C. So we learned about it that Saturday night. And then the story broke more on Sunday the 2nd, and by Monday the 3rd, it was in every newspaper in the United States. And we were really just so distraught and shocked at the time. John had been studying in Pakistan in the spring and had told us he was going up to the mountains of Pakistan for the summer, and then we didn't hear from him. So it was a period of 7 months from the end of April until early December where we had no contact from John, and we were just shocked and just, you know, really distressed to find that not only he had gone into Afghanistan, but that he had survived this terrible uprising and massacre of prisoners.
And what did, when you finally were able to make contact with him, what did he say to you about what he was doing?
Well, if I can say, the government kept him incognito for 54 days before we finally were allowed to see John. And what he told us is what he told the court later in his statement, that he went to Afghanistan because he wanted to help defend innocent civilian people in the northern reaches of Afghanistan who were being subjected to attacks by the Northern Alliance warlords. And this is all true. They were attacking civilians in northern Afghanistan. They were backed by the Russians at the time, not by the United States. And he thought it was his duty as a young, healthy Muslim to go into Afghanistan and help defend innocent civilians.
He said at the time of his plea agreement. Quote, I provided my services as a soldier to the Taliban, and in the course of doing so, I carried a rifle and two grenades. He also said later that he had made a mistake by joining the Taliban. But it was clearly military activity that he was involved in. You accept that, do you not?
Yes, that's exactly true. I mean, he volunteered, as I said in my article in the Times this Sunday, it's a lot like Ernest Hemingway. He volunteered his services for the army of a different country in the fight of a civil war against the government of that country by an insurgency, the Northern Alliance warlords in that case.
Well, let me ask you about the Ernest Hemingway comparison. I was going to get to that later, but since you brought it up, let me ask you about that because when I read that, and here's what you wrote, quote, like Ernest Hemingway during the Spanish Civil War, John volunteered for the army of a foreign government battling an insurgency. But would you not accept, Mr. Lin, that there's a pretty profound difference between Ernest Hemingway fighting on the side of democracy, the Republican side in the Spanish Civil War, against the fascist forces of Franco? That's pretty different, is it not, than from the kind of cause that your son was engaged in?
Not from the standpoint of John's motivation. John was motivated not to help the Taliban, but rather to defend innocent civilians who were being harmed by these really brutal warlords. And that was his motivation. And in that respect, I do think the analogy to Ernest Hemingway still holds.
Where do you come down then in the end about what John is responsible for? In the statement that he signed at the time of his conviction, he also talks about that he attended the training camp where he received military services, a facility associated with Osama bin Laden. That makes it sound less noble than what you're describing. He knew at that point that those forces were considering attacks against the United States.
No, Dave, let me interrupt you there.
Okay.
That's not true. John went to Afghanistan to volunteer for the Afghanistan Army. He went through an army training camp in the Afghanistan Army. And he knew, everybody knew at that time, that those camps were funded by this guy from Saudi Arabia named Osama bin Laden. But John had no conception that Osama bin Laden was involved separately in these terrorist planning attacks. John had no knowledge of that. Your question supposes that he did know that, and he didn't. Military training.
I understand your perspective on that, but that's not the perspective that the judge had at his sentencing when he said that very directly to your son, that you have to accept the consequences of the choices that you made. And the judge made the point that John was aware of the possibility that there were attacks being planned, and he chose not to leave.
No, sir. That's not a true statement. The judge never said any such thing. He confirmed that the government appropriately dropped those charges against John, and he needed to satisfy himself that John was not guilty of these charges. Remember, the government's original charge against John, one of them was that he provided services to a terrorist organization. The government dropped that charge in the plea bargain, and the judge wanted to confirm for himself that was true, that the government wasn't going soft on John. It was quite clear to the judge and quite clear to everybody that John was not involved in terrorism at all. He simply went through army training.
Here's the accounting of the trial where the judge told Mr. Lin to reflect on why he did nothing despite knowing that al-Qaeda was planning attacks on the country. You were willing to give your life for the Taliban but not for your country, the judge said. So that's what, according to the reporting that I've read, Mr. Lin, that's what was said at the time of the trial. That's what the judge said.
It's not what he said. I was there. What you just read is not a quote. The very end part, maybe, that you provided your services to the Taliban. The judge was clearly upset with John about that. But there was no suggestion by the judge in that trial that John had that he had any knowledge of any sort of terrorism activities or that he had done anything against the United States. Dave, these are really important points.
I know, and I accept your desire and your intent to make sure that we're accurate about this. All I can say is that reading what I've read about the trial and reading the accounts of the trial, that's what the reporting says, that the judge told Mr. Lin to reflect on why he did nothing despite knowing that al-Qaeda was planning attacks. We'll go back and look at the record, Mr. Lin, and if that's incorrect, we'll make sure we
And if John, Dave, if I can just say, if that's what John did, I wouldn't be here today.
Yeah.
I'm here today because John did nothing of the sort. John volunteered for the Foreign Army. He served in the Foreign Army. He went through the Foreign Army's basic infantry training. That's all he did. Those are the essential charges against my son. And the point I want to make here is that all of these other allegations about John, but made by the president and the attorney general and others, were not true. They were false charges of extreme terror, hostile charges about terrorism at a time right after 9/11. And that's not the way our system works.
I understand your point. And it's definitely true that the majority, 9 out of 10 charges were set aside in agreement for the plea that John took. And that is, as you suggest, an important point. But let's get at this question then of responsibility, I think, Mr. Lin, because that's really key, to people's feelings about this and where we're at this point in time, nearly 10 years now after 2011. You wrote in your op-ed piece, there was nothing treasonous in John's volunteering for the army, the Afghan army, Taliban army, in the spring of 2001. He had no involvement with terrorism. Now, I think what is hard for people to get their arms around, and I include myself in that, when you read that he went to a training camp, that he had met Osama bin Laden, and that he agreed in his plea deal that he had provided services to the Taliban, which it all makes you think that, you know, this is a young man who had some sense of what he was doing. He said in that famous and perhaps unfair CNN interview immediately after his capture that, you know, I will tell you to be honest, every single one of us, without any exaggeration, every single one of us was 100% sure that we'd all be martyred. Allah chooses to take a person's life, and we have no control over that. And then he's asked, did you enjoy the jihad? And John Walker Lin says, definitely. So it makes you think, Mr. Lin, that he had some sense of being involved with something that's not exactly the Spanish Civil War.
Dave, what you're referring to is the interview after this massacre. John was referring to the fact that he was a survivor, one of only 86 survivors out of 600 Taliban prisoners who were massacred in that uprising. That's the context of his statement. It doesn't reflect that he was engaged in anything of a sort, like terrorism. He's simply saying he's just been rescued from this horrible, horrible ordeal. That's what he's talking about.
I understand that that was at the time of his capture. But
you're referring to the CNN interview, and that's exactly he was rescued. He was darn near dead, and he made that statement. And he's saying, "I'm lucky to be alive." That's all he's saying, Dave.
Okay,
you're reading something into it that's completely unfounded.
Well, then let's talk about that, Mr. Lin, because the idea of John being released at this point, I think, has to do with a sense of, does he accept? So let me just ask you that then. What does John accept responsibility for? I know your judgment that he was not involved in anything that was involved in terrorism. What does John say to you? What does he accept responsibility for? Because he said even 9 years ago that if he'd really known what the Taliban was about, he never would have done this. So where does he acknowledge his own sense of complicity, I guess, in his actions?
Well, let me be clear, Dave, that John, not the judge, not the prosecutors, nobody at the end of this believed that John Lind had any involvement whatsoever with any activity against the United States of America. And that's why those charges were dropped. And so what does John accept responsibility for? He's accepted responsibility for what he did do, which is provide his services to the Taliban government by volunteering to serve as a soldier in the Taliban army in 2001. And he clearly has accepted that responsibility and the prison term that went with it. But contrary to the suggestions in your questions, he was not involved in terrorism at all. Those charges were falsely alleged against my son after 9/11 at a time when we were in grief and when the nation hadn't captured bin Laden. And John essentially became a scapegoat. If you go back and look at the factual record and compare it to what the government was saying at the time John was first picked up, you'll see there's a huge disparity. John is not a terrorist. He's a traditional, devout, sympathetic, spiritual Muslim young man. He would never be involved in terrorism.
What is, so again, my question is, what does John say that he's guilty of?
He's guilty of violating the sanctions that were imposed on the Taliban by President Clinton. He provided services to a foreign government that we had sanctions against. I should add, though, that the American government at that very time in the spring of 2001 was providing tens of millions of dollars of aid to the Taliban government itself. We were in a process at that point of normalizing our relationships with the Taliban. But nevertheless, John acknowledges that he violated those federal economic sanctions. But that, Dave, is not terrorism.
Frank Lind, joining us, the father of John Walker Lind, who has now served nearly half of his 20-year sentence. And in a very poignant and personal piece, Frank Lind wrote in the New York Times this past weekend, "Bin Laden is gone. Can my son come home?" That's the question we want to hear from our listeners this morning. Is it time for John Walker Lind to be able to come home to the Bay Area? What do you think? If you want to join us, you can at 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. You can email us your thoughts at forum@kqed.org. Forum@kqed.org. Let's hear what Jamie thinks first in Berkeley. Jamie, go ahead, please.
Hi. I teach human rights and international law at the University of California, Berkeley School of Law, and I just wanted to very quickly weigh in to clarify that Mr. Lind is correct about what his son pled guilty to. And it is a complicated distinction, Dave, so it's understandable that you and many others confuse the two. But briefly, yes, John did plead guilty to violating the sanctions against the Taliban government specifically, not against the Taliban government as a terrorist organization, quote-unquote. So it's against the Taliban government as a government, and those were under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, which is distinct from the foreign terrorist organization support laws that criminalize support to so-called foreign terrorist organizations, such as the Taliban. So, again, the way Mr. Lind has described it, both in the early the early discussion and the one just a few minutes ago, is accurate.
Jamie, thanks.
Guilty too.
Thanks for weighing in on this point. And again, because it's an important point, so I don't mean to belabor it, but I do think it's an important point, and I take both of your points in that regard. So to be clear about this, the reporting which I have read, which says, for example, in the New York Times account of July the 16th, 2002, Mr. Lind agreed to plead guilty to one of 10 counts in the indictment against him. It charged he had provided services to the Taliban, which is a felony because President Bush and former President Clinton had declared the Taliban a terrorist organization. You're saying, Frank Lind, that reporting, that way of describing what John, your son, pled to is inaccurate.
Absolutely inaccurate on that really fundamental point. And the government did try to get John to plead guilty to providing services to a terrorist organization, namely al-Qaeda. But John declined. He refused to do that, and the government backed away from that charge in the plea bargain.
Let's hear from more of our listeners. Joe in San Francisco is next. Joe, go ahead, please.
Yes, hi. Mr. Lind, I'm wondering how you would feel if you were on the other side of this story and you were a father who had lost a son during the 9/11 attacks. Would you be so quick to forgive someone who went over to Afghanistan and trained with the Taliban? Would you be so quick to forgive that person if you had lost your son in 9/11?
I think it would be a different story if my son had gone to Afghanistan after 9/11 and provided his services after 9/11 to the Taliban. That would be a totally different story. But please bear in mind, John went into Afghanistan in April of 2001 without any foresight as to what was going to happen on 9/11. None of us did at that time. Even President Bush and Secretary of State Powell were donating all that money to the Taliban government. We didn't see it coming. John didn't see it coming. I have great sympathy for anyone who's lost a son or daughter in the war in Afghanistan. Tremendous sympathy. But that doesn't mean that my son should be kept in prison any longer.
Michael in Oakland would like to participate in our conversation as well. Michael, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to mention that as far as I understand, Mr. Walker behaved as a devout Muslim and a conscious one with humanitarian concerns for a group of people. And I was just wanted to comment that I don't believe that should be criminalized if that's in fact what he did. And it sounds like to me that's in fact what he did, and I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Michael, thanks.
That's true. I mean, he did, as Dave said, he did volunteer for the Army of Afghanistan. He wasn't working in a humanitarian role. He was doing Army defense work on behalf of the Army of Afghanistan. But nevertheless, it was humanitarian motivation.
And let's Well, we'll take more calls in just a moment. 866-733-6786 is the number. 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. And now we have a caller ready, Robert in San Rafael. Robert, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. John Walker Lynn was captured in a firefight with American forces. He was wounded in that firefight, and he had a bag of grenades with him and a rifle. It's hard to claim that this man was not a terrorist. He met with Osama bin Laden in his training period. I'm sure that every trainee did not meet with Osama bin Laden. He must have presented some evidence that he wanted to do Osama bin Laden's bidding in terrorizing America.
Hey, Robert, this is Frank. You're my neighbor in San Rafael. But let me just say that you got your facts way wrong there. John was not picked up with any weapons. He had surrendered his weapons. The firefight that you're referring to occurred between Taliban prisoners and the forces of a very brutal Northern Alliance warlord. There were no American forces there at the time John was injured. And secondly, yes, John did meet Osama bin Laden in the summer of 2001. I think that begs a question. Why couldn't the CIA get in there and meet Osama bin Laden, knowing what they knew? But John didn't know at that time anything about bin Laden's terrorist plotting or his terrorist orientation at all. John just thought he was running a training camp for soldiers in Afghanistan.
It is true, and John acknowledged at the time of his plea agreement, again, to quote him, "I provided my services as a soldier to the Taliban, and in the course of doing so, I carried a rifle and two grenades." I understand your point that at the time of his capture, he was not carrying a rifle.
He had long since surrendered those weapons.
But it is factually true. Yes,
soldiers carry weapons. John was a soldier. Yes, that's true.
Here's an email from Ron who writes in, John Walker Lynn became the poster boy for the Bush post 9/11 spasm because they had no other target for national rage. I had written President Bush asking him to commute the sentence. There was no reason to treat him as an enemy combatant or an American traitor. John Walker Lynn did not attack America nor American armed forces. He followed his religious convictions and was entrapped by American special forces, probably out of uniform. Not sure about that last part. You would not say that John was – I mean, it's hard to argue entrapment if you're part of the Taliban army.
I agree with the gist of what that writer said. John was wrongly accused by a government that had, first of all, failed to protect us against the 9/11 attacks in the first place, and secondly, failed to capture bin Laden. And I think it was a somewhat deliberate effort to make John look like the bad guy.
A couple of people are writing in saying, I don't blame John Walker Lynn for his youthful indiscretions, but I do wonder about his parents, who don't seem to have a hint of the ramifications of his actions. That's what one person writes. Another person writes, I feel for Mr. Lynn, but his denial and lack of contrition in no way helps his son's cause. He sounds completely unapologetic. Would you like to respond to that? I mean, we've had a bit of a back and forth over what you over establishing the facts, and that's entirely appropriate. But I think what some listeners are saying is it sounds like you're saying my son did no wrong.
Well, what the listeners are saying, Dave, is what you were saying at the outset, which is that John somehow contributed to the attacks against the United States. And if that were true, you bet I would have contrition, and I would expect my son to have contrition. The problem with these questions is that they assume facts that aren't true.
No,
John was not involved in terrorism at all.
I understand your point about
or
that.
Or against the United States at all. He never fought against the United States.
I understand your view on that.
It's not just a view, Dave. It's the facts.
What I'm trying to get at, though, Mr. Lynn, is just a sense, I guess, and because it speaks to this question of when we let people return to society and all the things that as a father I absolutely understand that you want. But it is, I think, this question of contrition, and I'm just wondering about that because I understand the points of fact that you're making, but it also sounds like some of our listeners are saying that there's no sense that John did anything wrong. Do you feel that he did anything wrong?
I don't feel that John committed the kind of crimes he was accused of and that many of your listeners and even you continue to believe that John committed. He did not commit terrorism. He never fought against the United States of America. And I can't express contrition for things that my son didn't do.
Understood. Again, back to our callers. Let's take a couple of more in the short time that we have remaining. Chris in Sacramento wants to join us. Chris, go ahead.
Hi, quick point and one question. The point is your son was decided to remain in Afghanistan after the United States was attacked. We didn't get there the next day. So isn't that sort of suggest that he was supporting the efforts of Osama bin Laden and his acts of terrorism?
No, I'd say not. You have to put yourself in John's shoes. He was in the farthest reaches of Afghanistan, northeastern Afghanistan, on the border of Tajikistan when 9/11 happened, in this civil war between the Taliban and the Northern Alliance. And from that day forward, John did only one thing, and that was try to get out alive. There is no easy way out in Afghanistan. And it didn't help that the Americans, when they invaded Afghanistan, declared that the Geneva Conventions governing the handling of prisoners of war would not be followed. And there were, in fact, in northern Afghanistan in November and December of 2001, thousands of Taliban prisoners were killed by these brutal Northern Alliance warlords. John Lynn was very lucky to get out of that situation alive.
We just have a moment left. So let me ask you finally, Frank Lind, what your son is feeling at this moment and what your own hopes are. He has to serve, at least according to the initial court records, 17 years of his 20. You're hoping that he could somehow be released sooner. What's he feeling? What are you feeling?
Well, what I feel, Dave, is that 10 years is enough, regardless of what you think about John, even if you have some confused idea about the facts. 10 years of imprisonment is enough for this boy. That's my first and main point. And secondly, as far as John's concerned, he remains the same young man he always was. He's a nice kid. He's spiritual. He does his prayers every day. He's highly intellectual. He studies constantly. He's got a really very positive attitude, a sparkling sense of humor. He's a wonderful son. I just spoke to him this morning right before I came on the air, and I talk to him every week. And, you know, it's just important when you're in prison to try to keep your spirits up and keep your mind active. And those are the things John is focused on.
Frank Lind, the father of John Walker Lind, he's joined us for this important discussion. I thank you for being here. I know it must be very difficult, and I appreciate your participation in our conversation this morning.
Thank you for having me on, Dave.
And if you'd like to read Frank Lind's commentary, it appeared in the May 21st edition of the New York Times. I encourage you to read it. I encourage all of us to think about it and about where we're at in this conversation today. Frank Lind, again, my thanks for your participation. Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, Tina Lorberg, Christina Russo. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Dave Iverson, sitting in today for Michael Krasny. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.